Happy to have you with us live from our studios in Moosic. Today we, as usual, have a guest, but I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the Christmas holidays, since this is only a few days before Christmas. I was driving on the way up here, and I happened to listen to 8 hours of attempting to find Christmas music that I loved and enjoyed as a child, and I couldn't find one station that had Christmas music from my childhood, but in fact had all kinds of music of different renditions of the music that I loved to hear as a child. And I wonder if we've really lost what Christmas is all about. Some of them were songs that every third word were bleeped out. And I'd like to remind you all that this is a holiday not celebrating the birth of the computer, but in fact a spiritual one. And it's something that we really need to get back to for the sake of our children, and to remember that this is a spiritual holiday and a time when we need to share together with our family and especially with our children. So please remember this week with your loved ones, and for the next week your children probably will be home on Christmas vacation. And I would suggest you go out and purchase a book called Kid Connections. Kid Connections is a little book that you can get off the website www.kidconnections.com, and it's a book that's incredible for doing projects with your children at home, and you don't need to go out and buy anything. You could use all the materials you have around the house. So that would be my suggestion for this week and for next week, and finding projects for your children to do instead of watching the television or playing with the Nintendo and all those toys they get on the for Christmas. This morning on our program, we have a very special guest, Mike Spezial, Assistant Superintendent of the Dallas School District. Good morning, Mike.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
I'm terrific. I'd like to list some of the most amazing things that you do. Mike, I was flabbergasted to meet someone so knowledgeable of curriculum development as Mike is. He is Pennsylvania State Team Coordinator for Math and Science Consortium and also the Executive Director of the State Children's Accounting Association. We're going to talk about those things and some of his surveys and some of the work that he's doing at Dallas School District this morning. Would you do us a little favor, Mike, and give us a little bit of information about the school district you're in, Dallas School District? Give us a little bit of background.
Sure. I joined the Dallas District about 2.5 years ago. I came here from College of Music Cordia, where I was an education professor, and thought I wanted to get back into public education, and decided that Dallas was an excellent district in which to do that. We have about 2,500 kids from kindergarten through 12th grade. We start off with a half-day kindergarten program where we have a morning and an afternoon session. We have 4 schools. We have 2 elementary schools, one of which is the brand-new White Callis building that was just completed prior to the beginning of the start of this school year. We have a middle school that houses 6th through 8th grades, and we have a high school that's from 9 to 12th.
I have so much to talk to you about, I don't know where to start. Since you mentioned it, let's talk about that new building of yours. Isn't it environmentally sustainable? Is that correct? Am I off the mark here?
In terms of environmentally sustainable, I'm not sure what your question is, but the building is has been designed for energy efficiency. I don't think it can't sustain itself. I mean, we basically use natural gas and electricity to fuel the building, but it's been built on a high degree of energy conservation.
That's magnificent. Most people, was that your idea? Most people don't even think about that in terms of building school buildings.
Well, actually, that was Dr. Griffiths, our superintendent, and our school board. And the architectural firm that we had do the building. They did most of the planning. I really didn't have much to do at all with the planning and building of the building, because actually they had begun the conceptualization of the project prior to me joining the school district.
Now, you are very, by the way, you're Dr. Mike Spezial. I neglected to say that in the beginning. I apologize.
Sorry.
In the area of curriculum, you are very well-versed. I mean, I have had many occasions of speaking with you in regard to curriculum. Let's take a few steps backwards here. I've mentioned several times on this program the TIMSS report. Can you take us a little bit back and talk to us about what that report was in terms and what its significance is for American schools?
Sure. Basically, the TIMSS report was conducted by actually the head of the testing project was Bill Schmidt from Michigan State University, who I've had the opportunity of hearing several times at several conferences centering around TIMSS and TIMSS results. And basically, TIMSS was the third international math and science survey. What it sought to do, I think, was to try and determine where the United States places worldwide in terms of both science and mathematics performance. And if you look at the results on the base level, in the pure sense, basically the findings indicate that our kids in the United States do as well, if not better, and actually score fairly well at the fourth grade level. By the eighth grade, because the test actually spanned three different areas of elementary, middle, and high school. By eighth grade, our kids start to fall behind and now are a little bit below the middle of the pack in terms of both science and math. And by the time they reach 12th grade, our students are at the bottom.
So what do they attribute that to?
Well, there are a lot of different factors, I think. And I think the basic message from TIMSS, and the basic message that people try to communicate is that in the United States, we try to teach way too much in terms of the breadth of knowledge we try to impart to kids in both science and math. Our textbooks in the United States are 400, 500, 600 pages long, whereas compared to other countries, you'll find that those textbooks are maybe 100 pages or 120 pages long. And whereas those countries may introduce four or five major conceptual areas in a given school year, the United States attempts to introduce 20 to 30 or more. And those are just ballpark figures. And basically that's the message of TIMSS, is that we try to teach, and the quote, to quote Bill Schmidt, we try to teach a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that's what's reflected in the TIMSS test. You know, but I think there are some other factors, and rather than running into it headlong, in terms of just looking at the basic level of the TIMSS results and changing the entire curriculum, I think there are a lot of other factors that you need to consider. And there's a lot of cultural factors that go into scoring these tests in terms of how other countries are organized around education and how much time is devoted to education. And basically, you know, it's a test. And I can give one of the smartest students in my school a test, and if that student's not been exposed to those things, then he's not going to score well. That doesn't mean that he's not a smart student.
Right.
And I think so you have to approach it with a little bit of guarded criticism, I guess, you know, is a good term, because, you know, to run headlong into it and use the results and say, well, we're going to throw out all these concepts that we teach in math and science and we're going to follow some other country's model is not going to function, because the United States has a totally different culture.
Would you agree, though, that we do teach breadth instead of depth, which is why we don't have critical thinkers in this country?
Oh, I agree. I agree that we try to teach way too much. You know, how much is way too much? I don't know if anybody has an answer to that. But I think what you'll find is that even though you have results from studies like the TIMSS study and the TIMSS revised, which is the newer test that's being given actually, part of our statewide consortium in the Pittsburgh area has participated as a group in the new TIMSS study. But I think what you find from the results is that we try to teach way too much, but then you turn around and you look at the new standards movement in math and science, you know, which all the 50 states have now adopted standards in math, and Pennsylvania is ready to adopt standards in science. And if you look at the draft copy of science, and if you look at the existing copy of math, the TIMSS report has not had any impact.
Uh-huh.
Because now we have
more
hundreds and hundreds of standards that are being required of school districts. And so
you know, the school districts are caught between a rock and a hard place, because we're sitting here saying, you know, we recognize we should spend more time to develop more or a deeper conceptual understanding of content, and what the state is telling us, well, you have to meet all the standards.
What's the answer? What's the solution?
Well, I think the solution is that the people who make policy and the people who create the standards have to deal with the issues around TIMSS and around other studies like it that say we're trying to teach way too much. And so they need to really determine which standards are the core standards. You know, I mean, it's nice to have a lot of standards and a lot of expectations of your students, but I think there has to be some set of core that we all agree upon and say these are the standards that we all agree to teach, and we're going to try and teach them as deeply as we possibly can so that kids have a conceptual understanding they can take with them from school and go on to college or work or other fields. You know, and if you get to other standards, well, then that's great. You want to add other things in, you know, through a series of electives or enrichment courses or whatever it is. You know, I think that's where we have to go.
Well, we at Earth Heart Foundation have discovered exactly what you are saying, that the most successful schools we have found, rather than teaching to standards, have in fact taught to depth rather than breadth, and have found that their students are much more, are able to access information and use resources much more conclusively than their counterparts, who are learning a tremendous amount of information and really don't get any depth as far as the information that they receive. Now, recently you did a survey, I suppose it's through the Pennsylvania Team Math and Science Consortium, on professional development. Can you summarize a little bit about that survey?
Sure. The Pennsylvania State Team is actually, the name is, it doesn't actually roll off your tongue. It's the Pennsylvania State Team for the Mid-Atlantic Regional Eisenhower Math and Science Consortium. So that's why no one would ever remember what it is, and I've been trying to get them to change it so that somebody could remember it or come up with
an acronym.
The acronym, you know, which is what we do in education all the time. But basically, the team is made up of people from business and industry, colleges and universities, of teacher preparation, teacher education institutions, administrators from schools, both public and private, and teachers, which really are the backbone of the organization. And basically, the team was started, I want to say, probably about 10 years ago, because I actually worked on it when I was at Misericordia. And the team was started with the purpose of unifying, developing a unifying message for math and science, and improving the areas of math, science, and actually technology instruction across the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And so the team is now, for lack of an organizational structure in its beginnings, has now gone to a regional structure. So there's a Northeastern Consortium and there's a Southeastern, and it's broken up into six areas. We still have a steering committee, and the steering committee governs the entire state in terms of this consortium and is actually affiliated with Research for Better Schools from the Philadelphia area. We, every once in a while, I guess probably on a 3 or 4 year cycle, we determine that we need to have a needs assessment to determine the state of professional development, which is actually the focal point of the organization. To determine whether or not we're making any inroads in the Commonwealth, where we're going in terms of professional development for teachers and administrators in schools from K to 12. And so we did a survey, I guess it was in the fall of last year we started, and we cycled them out by the spring, got them back later in the spring, I guess even early summer, and we started to tabulate the results. And we surveyed all of the school districts in Pennsylvania. So
wow.
There are 501 school districts, and we sent out thousands of surveys to teachers and principals that blanketed all of K to 12 schools. So we had elementary as well as middle and high school principals and teachers respond. And we sorted the results into two groups. We had a teacher response group, and we had a principal response group.
All right, now I'm going to interrupt you for 1 second while we take a little bit of a break.
Okay.
And remind our audience that you are listening to Children Come First with Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here every Tuesday from 10 to 11 a.m. This is WAAT 750 a.m. on your radio dial. And today we're with Dr. Mike Spezial of the Dallas School District, who is also a member of the Pennsylvania state team of the Mid-Atlantic Eisenhower Consortium and Research for Better Schools, and is with the executive director of the State Child Accounting Association. Now, Mike, continue with your story. And you, all 500 school districts responded?
We did not have a response from every school district, but we did have a significant response. I believe we had 800-plus teachers respond. Actually, 814 teachers responded to the survey, and 195 principals statewide. We are still actually collecting results because the Pittsburgh area, the greater Pittsburgh area, did not participate in the survey last spring because they were actually involved in what we had talked about before. They're actually involved in the TIMSS testing. And because they were involved in that, and it's very time-intensive, they decided to defer participating in this survey and asked if they would be able to send the results in, I guess, by the first of the year, which is rapidly approaching.
What did you find so far?
Well, it was some very interesting results. It's, you know, with the movement in Pennsylvania now with standards in math and the proposed standards in science, those are really the areas that we focused on. We also looked at the integration of innovative science programs and math programs, such as the Chicago Math Program, and in science there are many programs like FOSS, which is Full Option Science, and STC, and those science programs are really for elementary. They're based on kits and hands-on science and conceptual development. So we try to find out what kinds of programs teachers are using in schools, and if they are using the programs, what the frequency is and how many schools are actually adopting those types of things. The other thing is we try to seek out what types of professional development are now occurring in the state in terms of whether they're one-day types of in-service workshops or whether they're embedded within the teaching structure or whether they're after school or summertime or what have you. Because that's really the basis for this, is to give us some kind of information or a baseline that we can then plan strategies for the various consortial structures in the state to be able to provide quality in-service programming for teachers.
So basically what you're saying then is that Pennsylvania is moving, has a dichotomy in terms of moving towards standards as well as trying to align itself with the TIMSS report and doing depth rather than breadth.
Yes.
And so teachers are being trained in this regard.
And we're finding that to be the case.
It seems like a contradiction, though.
Well, it is a contradiction. It's a contradiction because on one hand you have state requirements, and the science standards are not required yet, but soon will be, I'm assuming. There are supposed to be back to the state board for adoption. They've been through the review process actually several times and have been reviewed by independent reviewers, but now you're standing on a bridge with, on one side you have the PA standards that you really have to adhere to because by state law your students are held accountable, and students in all schools are held accountable for performance on standards-based assessments. And on the other side, you're trying to look at innovative quality programs that really look at the depth of the material and try to get into conceptual development and critical thinking skills and those types of things.
Well, I was at the legislative hearing last week, and there was much controversy in terms of passing those, so I'm not sure that that's going to be something. But I'd like to know what Dallas School District is doing with regard to curriculum. I know you have many innovative programs because of your information and your depth of knowledge. So tell us a little bit about what Dallas is doing.
Well, we have several different things going on. I guess the crux of what we're doing right now is really based on what's come down from the state. We have the language arts, the reading, speaking, listening, and writing standards that were adopted and put into law last year. and we have the math standards which were put into law last year. So, you know, the state is anxiously awaiting our plans from all the schools in Pennsylvania to put these in place and to show how their curricula are aligned with the new standards. So basically, one of the major projects we've undertaken is, as with most districts, or if not all districts in Pennsylvania, is to take a look at what we were doing from kindergarten through 12th grade and trying to look at the new standards that have been passed and trying to align our curriculum with the new standards. And I think what most people are finding, at least people that I talk to from various school districts, is that our curriculum actually is probably much more advanced as are most curricula than the standards, because, as you know, the standards are based on what Pennsylvania counts as a minimum anticipation of student performance. So in actuality, we're doing much more, and so are most, if not all, the other school districts, much more than what the state is requiring. What we did find, which was very interesting, and you know that Pennsylvania is now a high-stakes testing state, where we have the Pennsylvania assessment given at grades 5, 8, and 11, and we have the writing assessment given at grades 6 and 9, and now at grade 11. And those tests are continuously expanding. I guess it's going to move down into the third grade. We're still waiting to hear about that. But students have to pass the test, and there are some state incentives that are tied to it, so that if your school performs significantly better than it has in the past, then there's money attached to it for incentives. So schools are rapidly looking at where they are in terms of their performance on these standards-based assessments. And what we found in our alignment is that although we are teaching things that are tested in the PA assessment, we found out that in many cases we were teaching them after the test was given. So if a test is given in fifth grade, we may be teaching things either after the test was administered at the end of fifth grade or maybe at the beginning of sixth grade. So we're taking a conscious look at whether or not we want to alter the curriculum content to more closely align it with how the testing patterns are given.
So basically what you're saying then is the standards are all changing the local curriculum.
Yes, in fact they are. And I don't know if they're having a tremendous impact on the curriculums. I think what's happening is more in terms of when things are taught, at what grade levels they are taught. In Dallas, we found, for instance, that we were teaching certain writing skills in terms of literary devices. We were teaching them, you know, 2 or 3 months after the state was testing them. Well, by making a simple modification in the curriculum, we're able to instruct students prior to taking the test.
I'm getting a sense here that we're all developing curriculum here to pass tests instead of the learning and the experiences of the child. Is that the message I'm getting here from the state?
Well, you know, that's been a debate, like what came first, the chicken or the egg. I mean, basically, you know, we've talked about teaching to the test for a long time and whether or not that's a good thing or a bad thing. And if all we're doing is preparing students for taking tests, then, you know, what are we doing here? But I think what begs the question is, what kind of a test is it? You know, is it a good test? And if the test actually measures the things that we want to teach, then I don't perceive that there's a problem in teaching to the test, because basically what we're doing is teaching to an assessment, which should be part of the educational process anyway. As long as the assessment measures what it's supposed to be, and if the assessment is criterion referenced, which is what the PA State Association or PA State assessment is supposed to be, then it's based on your curriculum. So, you know, assessments and curriculum should be one in the same. They should be all continuous. You know, and curricular wise, you know, what we teach is what we should test. You know, what we write in terms of our curriculum is what we should teach. So there's a whole alignment that has to be put in place. So are we teaching to the test? Probably. Is it a bad thing? Not necessarily.
Yeah, but does that reflect real learning? And I'm going to give you an example here in terms of the writing test that for testing the students, and that is that it is basically a perceptual. It's challenging because when it's a writing test, a student has to write out their information, and what basically it is that when the test goes in to be scored, there's no particular scoring measure. It all has to do with the perception and the ability of the tester in wherever the testing institution is. Am I not correct in that assumption?
Well, that's I don't think that's true of the Pennsylvania Writing Assessment. The state has tried, and I think they've succeeded at least to some extent in putting together what has been referred to as a holistic scoring guide. The holistic scoring guide basically is what performance-based assessment is all about. If you're going to do a performance assessment, which is what we really promote in our curriculum and we're promoting with our teachers, performance-based is really having students apply the knowledge that they've gained in a class to a real-life situation, or in this case, to a real writing situation or what have you. And what makes it performance-based is really having a scoring guide that the students are aware of. I think in the past what we've done in testing is, you know, and even when I was in school and when I went to college, testing was a secret. You know, you had to take a test, and basically you were trying to guess what the professor or the teacher was going to ask you, and that's how you prepared for your test. Well, there are no secrets in assessment. We're trying to tell kids that this is what you need to know, this is what we're going to score you on, and if those things promote learning, then that's great. And what the state has done is put together this holistic scoring guide that really has been used, and it's on a scale, it's on a scored scale, so that when you look at it, if the student, you know, and it's very specific. It says if the student includes in his writing references to his own life or references to his own experiences, then that's one score. If there are no references at all, then that's a lower score, and so on and so forth. So it's pretty clearly spelled out, and it's really referred to in educational terms as a rubric, which is not one of my favorite words, but it's a rubric. So we.
All right, you're going to have to explain to our audience what a rubric is.
Well, a rubric, I guess, in very simple layman's terms, if you were going to create a rubric to score, let's say we're going to score fine dining, okay? What is it that you perceive as the ultimate in fine dining? And so you would have to identify characteristics of fine dining. So let's say I was going to score it on a 5-point scale, and I was going to say that number 5 is the highest score. And on the number 5 level, I'm going to say that in a fine dining institute or an institution, I'm going to go in and I'm going to have linen tablecloths. Okay? Well, then what would a 4 be? Well, a 4 might not be linen. You know, it might be red and white checkered plastic, you know, and then onward down the line where you end up at a placemat is a number 1, and a 0 is no, just a table, nothing on it. So basically it's a progression of a specific characteristic of what you're trying to score. So in terms of writing, when you're looking at grammatical application, if you're looking at grammar, then a perfect score would be no grammatical errors whatsoever, you know, and then a score down from that would be, you know, just a few simple punctuation marks that are misplaced. And then on down the line from there would be sentence fragments and so on and so forth. So you're looking at very specific characteristics as you score things. And that's what a rubric is.
Well, I'll tell you that we have to take a little bit of a break here, but that is probably the best explanation I have ever heard for a rubric, and I've heard quite a few of them. So I congratulate you on that. I'm sure our listening audience now knows what a rubric is. We have about 2 minutes here before the end here, and I'm playing the devil's advocate here. You know me well enough to know that I'm just trying to get pieces of information out of you for our general public. But I want to put something out to you, a story I heard from someone who was tested in the writing sample, and the story went that the child had no spelling ability whatsoever, was a straight-A student, however, had a computer at home and used it extensively in the computer at school and had grammatical problems, but was able to use spell check and grammar check on the computer. And so all of the work that was handed in was excellent until he came to the test, the state testing, where he did not have the opportunity to use spell check or grammar check on his computer, either way, at school or at home, and scored very low. So here we have an outstanding A student who knows how to use his resources and yet scores very low on a state assessment test. And I just want you to think about that a little bit, because we're going to be going to a break right now.
Okay.
You are listening. You're going to respond to that after we hear a little bit from our sponsors. You are listening to Children Come First, WAAT 750 AM on your radio dial. This is Dr. Daria Brzezinski. We're here with Dr. Mike Spezial from the Dallas School District, Assistant Superintendent. And we will return in a few minutes as soon as we hear a few words from our sponsors. Please join us in our second half hour. Thank you.